All right, everyone, we are approaching the end of January, and this month has lasted so long. I cannot wait for it to be over. But in the meantime, I get to give you guys a new episode of Superhero Deep Dive. So yay! All right, welcome, welcome, welcome. I am your host, Jason. I have a fun episode. I say that every week, but I do. I really like doing these. I do have a good episode lined up for you. Before I get into it, let me give you my normal disclaimers. The information is pulled from various sources across the internet and may or may not be completely complete, but they do give a really good insight on the current superhero. If I miss storylines, if I miss little fun facts, it's usually because they are either I don't consider them to be big or influential to who the character is, or they may be out of like a different universe, like Marvel Zombies, or you know, Earth X, or in the DC universe, if it's like the Kingdom Come universe and stuff, you know, they're not considered the main universe, so I don't normally include those. But with that being said, if you guys have any fun tidbits, questions, comments, concerns, critiques, requests for future episodes, please, please let me know. You can reach me on Twitter, Twitch, or Instagram under Super Deep Dive and use the hashtag Superhero Deep Dive. My DMs, messages, comments are always open. I try to acknowledge and respond to everyone, so there's that. You can also comment, like, subscribe, share on my YouTube page. It's Superhero Deep Dive. I post slideshows every week at Tuesday at 8 a.m. With the podcast. And I also have started doing an attempt. Hopefully it'll be consistent, but superhero memes of the week and pro wrestling memes of the week, because I'm a pro wrestling fan as well. So yeah, you can take that, or you can email me directly at b4itall@yahoo.com. So there's that. And yeah, and if it is a Tuesday or Thursday, hello, you can be listening to me on internet radio at Outworld Fleet Radio at www.un-con-ventional.com/radio. Okay, now this week I am going to be talking about Machine Man. He's crazy. It's a crazy story. His real name is Aaron Stack. It's also Z2P45-9-X-51. So he was robot number 51 in a series. He was the last of a series of sentient robots created at the Broadhurst Center for the Advancement of Mechanized Research in Central City, California. That is a lot. Let's see. BCAMR. No, I was looking to see if it was an acronym, but it's not. He was created by robotics engine expert Dr. Abel Stack for the U.S. Army. However, all previous 50 experimental robots went mad as they achieved sentience and became psychotic due to a lack of identity. X-51 was the only survivor because he was treated as a son by Stack and given a human face mask, as well as being exposed to one of the monoliths from 2001. So, like, you know, it ties in with that. After Stack died trying to protect him, X-51 assumed the human name Aaron Stack and escaped confinement, only to be relentlessly pursued by the army. X-51 named himself Mr. Machine in issue number 9 of a 10-issue run of 2001. While on the run, the newly Christian Machine Man initiated contact with humanity in order to better understand it. After being captured and later freed, Machine Man was found by psychiatrist Peter Spaulding. He also battled Colonel Craig's troops. After that, he encountered Curtis Jackson, alongside the Hulk, he battled Curtis Jackson, and soon after that, he was redesigned and rebuilt by Dr. Oliver Broadhurst. He then first encountered the Fantastic Four. After that, he met mechanic Gears Garvin, and then battled Baron Brimstone. He also battled Madam Menace, and he then first encountered Aurora, Northstar, and Sasquatch of Alpha Flight. Spalding and Garvin set up Machine Man with a human identity of Aaron Stack, insurance investigator for the Delmar Insurance Agency, but he continued having adventures as a superhero on the side. So it's kind of weird. As they set him up and set up his kind of origin and getting him started as a hero, they kind of threw him in with a bunch of other heroes, like, okay, you're going to meet this guy and help him. You're going to meet the Hulk and help him out. And it's kind of weird. In Iron Man number 168, which was of March of 1983, Machine Man attempts to pay Iron Man a visit. Machine Man was seeking to compare notes with Iron Man, thought to be a robot by Machine Man. At the time, Iron Man was drunk, irate, and under considerable stress from the machinations of Obadiah Stane. Iron Man attacked Machine Man and almost killed two of his own employees, because that's what good bosses do. At the last possible second, Machine Man's extendable arm pushed them out of the way. Because that's what heroes do, right, Thor? Alright. In a meeting with the Thing of the Fantastic Four, Machine Man also first met and fell in love with another sentient robot named Jocasta. Alongside the Thing and Jocasta, he battled Ultron. However, during the battle, Machine Man witnessed the seeming destruction of Jocasta by Ultron's hands. In 1990, Machine Man guest starred in Iron Man Annual number 11, which was part of the Terminus Factor storyline. That story created strong hints that the 2020 Machine Man may turn out not to be the true X-51, but instead be a duplicate created by Sunset Bane. The story concludes in Thor Annual 15, also set in 1990, or that issue came out in 1990, I'm sorry. He later fought alongside the Avengers, which led to an invitation to become a team reservist. Later, he was captured by S.H.I.E.L.D., who wanted to use his technology to create another Deathlok. He helps the X-Men and Doug Locke, who is a different character. He helped them against the villainous Red Skull, who had taken over the helicarrier where Machine Man was held. So, Doug Locke is an interesting character, by the way, and this is just a little side note. He is a character that, like, as a mutant, his name was Doug, and I can't remember his last name. I want to say Doug Ramsey. But he was set as a character that could understand any language. For the most part, he was considered worthless, out on the field. Like, he couldn't fight. He was kind of kept back. But he did have this techno-organic alien named Warlock that would merge with him and they would become Douglock. So that's where that came from. And if I'm wrong, let me know. But I believe that's what it is. I haven't heard from them in a while. So yeah. But anyways. Okay. Machine Man helped the X-Men against Bastion and his Sentinels. But as a consequence, he was infected by the Sentinel programming. Assuming a more robotic look in the subsequent series, X-51, and losing self-control whenever he was faced with a mutant. During the series, he was on the run from Sebastian Shaw, who wants his technology for himself. Because of his new programming, while seeking aid from the Avengers, he attacks Justice and Firestar, because they are mutants. Because of his actions against Justice and Firestar, X-51's membership in the Avengers is revoked. Aww. I'm sorry. Okay. At the end of X-51, he encountered one of the monoliths and disappeared. brought into the presence of the monolith's creators, the cosmic beings known as the Celestials. Machine Man later joined a team called Next Wave, formed by the highest anti-terrorism effort, or HATE, which is a subsidiary of the Beyond Corporation, to fight unusual weapons of mass destruction. Now preferring simply to be called Aaron, Machine Man is partnered with Monica Rambeau, Tabitha Smith, Elsa Bloodstone, and the Captain. And the team soon discovers that HATE is funded by the Beyond Corporation, leading them to go rogue and carry out their mission on their own prerogatives. Calling humans fleshy ones and expressing a degree of pride in his robot-y parts. That's awesome. I want some robot-y parts. Which he uses to kill Fin Fang Foom. Aaron has developed a fondness for alcohol, stating, "My robot brain needs beer," on regular occasions. He is not especially popular with his teammates because of his self-important attitude, and as is learned in a flashback, that after being brought to space by the Celestials at the conclusion of his previous series, he was dumped back to Earth because the space gods considered him to be a complete and utter worthless person. There's a better word to use, but I don't want to get in trouble for cussing. So, he appears to have a rather serious attraction to Elsa Bloodstone and stares at her chest constantly, much to her chagrin. Now, if I remember correctly, Elsa Bloodstone also has a big gem in her chest. So, while it is creepy and perverted, if we look and try to give him the benefit of the doubt, he may be staring at the actual bloodstone. Maybe not. Maybe he just like those tatas, as they say. I don't know. I'm going to skip over this part. All right. It is revealed that when still an agent of HATE, Aaron would often sneak into Dirk Anger's room to steal beer until he found out Anger made it out, or until he found out what Anger made it out of. He later uses his knowledge of Dirk's quarters to steal Anger's mother's dress and hold it hostage in exchange for the safe escape of Next Wave. I don't know what Anger made his beer out of. I should look it up, but I'm not going to now. All right. If you know, leave a message in the comments, because that would be awesome to find out, because I don't know. All right, anyways, let's see here. Later appearances in the Marvel Comics Presents Volume 2 series suggest that X-51's memories of his time with the Celestials may have been skewed as he experienced visual hallucinations of a miniature Celestial helping him overcome his psychological issues. Because why not, right? Because why not? We all need little miniature Celestials, like little leprechauns helping us from time to time, right? All right, Machine Man appears in a flashback to Iron Man 168 in Iron Man Captain America Casualties of War, in trying to convince Captain America of the rightness of his position. Iron Man tells of the time Machine Man came to visit him. Machine Man was seeking to compare notes with Iron Man, thought to be a robot. So yeah, you know, it shows where Machine Man extended his arm and saved Iron Man's employees. Iron Man uses this incident as a need for accountability in the superhero population. So he used himself messing up as an example of needing to be under control. Okay, you know, I'll buy that. I'll buy that for a dollar, you know, whatever. All right. Aaron Stax and Sleepwater are then recruited to aid Miss Marvel in finding her teammate, Aranya, as part of a S.H.I.E.L.D. strike force known as Operation Lightning Storm. In the promotional cover for this appearance, he is in the costume which he wore during Next Wave. His appearance is entirely keeping with Next Wave. He wears the same costume and displays the nonsensical and zany personality developed in place of his previously logical and friendly self. He reveals that Agent Maria Hill from S.H.I.E.L.D. offered him financial compensation to join the initiative, enraging Ms. Marvel, who had supported it from the beginning, for free. He spends much of his time in Chile and aboard the mini-carrier 13, Ms. Marvel's headquarters at the time, antagonizing and criticizing every available agent. So, now with this being said, the reason that's kind of, controversial, or where they were talking about his appearance is keeping in with Next Wave, is because they were trying to say Next Wave was not held in the main Marvel universe, that it was held in like a separate area, but then they kept referring to it in different topics and different things, different stories, and then they're using the character in his Next Wave uniform and personality, so they're, it really became a stumbling block in Marvel, because it was almost like they painted themselves in a corner, and then they were like, ah, screw it, we'll just walk right through it. So that's what happened. In addition to financial compensation, S.H.I.E.L.D. has also provided Aaron with a life model decoy of Monica Rambeau, which is programmed to cry for him. Keeping him in his new role of comic relief, Aaron has been shown using the life model decoy body as a replacement part for his damaged body, going so far to offer womanly advice to a deeply shocked Aranya. Wow, that's a whole different level of creepy that I don't even want to go into. All right, let's see here. Under orders from Captain Steve Rogers, Machine Man teams up with the Red Hulk, who is tracking down a Qatari rebel named Dagan Shah, whom Red Hulk believed to be behind the death of his old friend Will Kroger. Machine Man and Red Hulk arrive in Sharzad, where they find Dagan Shah in the disguise of Arabian Knight, who lets them through the force field and leads them to his palace. Once inside the palace, Dagan Shah sheds his disguise, reveals his true identity as the Sultan Magus, and imprisons Red Hulk and Machine Man, as it is shown that the real Arabian Knight is imprisoned in a crystal. Red Hulk and Machine Man escape when Sultan Magus travels to Cairo, after probing Red Hulk's mind to find out who could have sent Red Hulk to Sharzad. Machine Man reveals to Red Hulk that Sultan Magus has used Regellian technology to manipulate hydrogen, which involved providing a supply of water and terraforming a part of the desert for Sharzad. When Sultan Magus returns, he attacks Red Hulk and Machine Man. Sultan Magus rips Machine Man in half, when Arabian Knight is freed from his imprisonment, Red Hulk and Machine Man continue their fight with Sultan Magus until General Reginald Fortian arrives and ends the fight. Fortian states to Red Hulk and Machine Man that Sharzad has been recognized as a nation by the Arab League upon Sultan Magus' agreeing to stop the weapons trading, and states that they are trespassing. Sultan Magus then orders Red Hulk and Machine Man to get out of Sharzad while he secretly plans to have his revenge on Red Hulk someday. That seemed like it did absolutely nothing. Like, that was just a giant nothing burger. So, I don't know. We're going to send someone in, you know, have them start a fight, and then say they're trespassing afterwards. It sucks to be them. Alright, following an altercation with the Red She-Hulk, Machine Man and Red Hulk track 01 to her floating island base, Ogygia. As Red Hulk and Machine Man are fighting 01's genetically engineered sea monsters, 01 sends Black Fog to fight Machine Man and Red Hulk. Using a device given to him by Jacob Feynman, Machine Man disables 01's drones and frees Black Fog from 01's control as Black Fog leaves the area, stating that his debt is paid. Machine Man and Red Hulk arrived in Hawaii to fight a genetically engineered Hydra that was created by 01. So, you know, they're using him a lot as just like a co-star, but not even like an important co-star. Like, he's just here. He's here to use. And I'm not liking that. I feel like he has a lot of potential. But that was his history, basically. Like, what do you guys think? Like, they had some really cool moments, and then it's like they just constantly throw him to the side. All right. Let's go over some powers, and then we're gonna go into it a little bit more and see what we can do with this character. Powers. Machine Man was constructed by unnamed computer engineering specialist under Dr. Oliver Broadhurst at the Broadhurst Center for the Advancement of Mechanical Research. Dr. Abel Stack was the chief programmer, though. Machine Man's robotic materials design and construction of titanium alloy provide him with a number of abilities, as does his adamantium composition. He possesses superhuman strength, speed, stamina, durabilities, and reflexes. He is an expert in his own construction and repair. Well, I mean, the dude gets ripped in half like he should be. I would hope so, at least. And he has superhuman visual acuity. He possesses an above-normal intellect with the capacity for unlimited self-motivated activity, creative intelligence, and human-like emotions. He has superhuman cybernetic analytical capabilities. Wow, that was a big sentence in so few words. Including the ability to process information and make calculations with superhuman speed and accuracy. Machine Man is powered by solar energy. He can also draw power from several different external energy sources if needed. Machine Man has the ability to telescope his arms and legs to a length of 100 feet. And Machine Man's hands are equipped with variable payload fingers. I wish I had payload fingers. That just sounds like something fun. Some routinely carried in his fingers, others stored in hidden recesses in his belt. His fingers contain a different variety of devices, including gas, chromatograph, laser interferometer, micropulse radar, audiometer, seismometer, gravity wave detector, pulse code modulator, standard computer input outputs, radio beacon, all wave transceiver, laser cutting torch weapon, and projection of heat, cold, or electricity. One of his fingers has also been shown to contain a bullet firing mechanism that used 357 Magnum ammunition. He has the ability of flight under his own power through the means of anti-gravity discs as well. During the X-51 series, Machine Man had a few extra features thanks to nanotechnology within him at the time. This mainly included parts of himself being rebuilt if damaged, also causing many changes in his look from issue to issue. He also had a beam cannon on his chest. Because why not, right? That's how he felt that he was similar to Iron Man, because of the unibeam. Alright, in Next Wave, he became a living Swiss Army knife of sorts, containing various tools and weapons for a multitude of situations, both useful and esoteric. When asked if he could impregnate a human woman from several feet away, Aaron simply states, "I am full of very useful devices." That's really cringe. I don't like that at all. I wish I didn't read that. Alright, in the Point One event, as many other heroes, Machine Man was slightly revamped, gaining new powers and abilities, now being a cross between the nanotechnological being in the X-51 miniseries and the living Swiss Army knife of Next Wave. Machine Man is now suffused with nanites, able to effortlessly change his appearance from the earliest jumpsuited look to the more humanoid looks of Next Wave. Also, his nanotechnology allows him to transform and rebuild every piece of machinery he comes in contact with, such as building an anti-gravity vehicle out of a motorcycle. So, yeah, that's quite the ability right there. Basically, they were like, well, if he's going to be called Machine Man, we're going to give him control over every machine, basically. So, fun facts. in the Spider-Man Unlimited animated TV series, the Machine Man served as the High Evolutionary's enforcers on... Or the Machine Men, I'm sorry. Served as the High Evolutionary enforcer on Counter-Earth. Spider-Man saved a Machine Man named X-51 from disassembly in the episode called Steel Cold Heart. And he joined forces with Spider-Man and the human rebels in their struggle against the High Evolutionary's regime. This robot is one of a group of Machine Men who switches sides after not wanting to be scrapped following serious damage in battle. The design of these Machine Men is somewhat reminiscent of the original Machine Man, especially in terms of color and abilities. However, they are substantially bulkier than Machine Man's human-sized physique, drawing inspiration from the design of the Sentinels from X-Men comics or animated series. So, that's really all the fun facts I have for him. What do you guys think of Machine Man? There's a lot to it, right? I mean, there's a lot of weirdness. But if we boil it down, you know, he was, at least before he got drunk and discovered beer, you know, he really loved humanity. So let me know what you guys think of him. You know, like I said, you can reach me on Instagram, Twitter, and I'm never on Twitch, but maybe Twitch under Super Deep Dive. You can comment, look at some fun comic book memes, superhero memes, and, you know, send me messages. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, please comment, like, subscribe, share, help me grow my audience. Like, I really would love to actually grow my audience. If you guys have any comments, critiques, questions, fun facts that I may have missed, requests for future episodes, anything, just if you want to start a conversation, let's do it. Let's do it. Leave a message on the videos on Instagram. I respond to everything, even if it's just hitting the like button to show that you are acknowledged. I do try my best to respond to everything. So yeah, let's do that. And you can always email me directly as well at b4itall@yahoo.com. So let's go into power expansions. This is where I go and look to see if they could work in the movies, if they could work better as like an animated series, a new comic series, anything like that, and anything at all. And I have covered it all. In fact, last week's episode of Jade, I did a comic series idea for her. But, you know, most of the time I go to movies or live-action TV shows because I am a fan of that. But the thing I like most about Machine Man is the fact that he knows he's a machine. He knows he has sentience, and he still tries to adapt to human culture and society. In this way, he's kind of an outsider to both humans and machines. It's not like Vision, who wants to understand humanity, has feelings, but, you know, still acknowledges and accepts the fact that he's a machine. Machine Man had wanted to be human, and that's kind of what separates him from Vision. And I like that, because I think it provides a unique struggle. So this kind of premise would make an awesome movie. And in fact, I was thinking about it, and I've got a really good storyline to throw at you guys. So here it is. Like, let's start with some background for him. So, like, we can open a movie with an old storage unit being discovered after being abandoned and forgotten about for years by S.H.I.E.L.D. In it are two figures, a deactivated Machine Man and Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, who's still in his glass tube from Captain America: First Avenger. Okay, so they were moved, and this may manipulate Machine Man's origin for a bit, but I think it's not going to hurt his character, like who he is. But the figures get reactivated and reacclimated into modern times through S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, we can get flashback of their construction and abilities, show them trying to train and get a feel for how things are, like modern speech patterns, slang, mannerisms, and the society norms. And the reason I say that is because we have to remember that a lot has changed since World War II times, and they may need to update their programming as a result. You know, there definitely wasn't the same level of equality that there is now. There are more rights now. Let's see, what else is there? We went through a time of segregation, and you know, who's to say that these robots like Jim Hammond or Machine Man, these characters, don't have some kind of programming regarding that, you know? Because I'm, like I said, times were totally different. What if Machine Man is actually created, because he was created with kind of almost like a white guy, looked like a mannequin almost. But what if he's got African American skin tones, or even Hispanic or Asian? I mean, like, let's open it up. What if and the same can be said with Jim Hammond. You know, I think because he was presented in World War II, we need to keep him as a Caucasian, simply because we could use that same prop, you know, with the glass tube and stuff. We can say, you know, that was the president at the time, so that. But we can do a lot with Machine Man and make him a different ethnic, or have a different ethnic look without compromising the character. So let's add some diversity into it. You know, I think it'd be fun. But anyways, so we'd see them go on a couple of SHIELD missions, you know, like little things to get them trusted in the field. And while that happens, it could totally open the door for them to meet other heroes like Kate Bishop, the new Black Widow, stuff like that. Like, you know, these things. Maybe he runs into Spider-Man. And you know what'd be funny is with the extendable arms, if Machine Man and Spider-Man go swinging through the city together on their webs and extendable arms, not any other kind of swinging. Get your head out of the gutter. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But anyways, but you know, like, this could totally open up the door for other storylines in the MCU, like the Skrulls and stuff like that. You know, with these two characters, if they're working together and we're building a movie where they slowly but surely, as they become more acclimated, they can start to, you know, show more humanistic traits and things like that, and functions that they can actually help lead the next Avengers and also be an integral part of the next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And as a result, you know, because Machine Man's such an obscure character, but he's straight from Jack Kirby, which is, you know, amazing in itself. And Jim Hammond being one of the very first superheroes ever created, that's a huge fan service as far as the nostalgia value. You know, like, that's what would make it so much fun. Is, you know, we're just taking that and we're giving that homage to what was, you know, and integrating it into what will be. But what do you guys think of that? What do you think of all that? I think it's pretty cool. I found a way to kind of integrate it. I had a really hard time when I did the Jim Hammond podcast talking about how to fit him into the Marvel Universe. But I think this could work. And who would you cast? Who would you cast as these characters? Let me know in the comments. Or shoot me an email, or shoot me a message on Instagram or Twitter under Super Deep Dive. You know, I would absolutely love to hear what you guys have to say. But let's expand on that, okay? I'm going to cut it off from here because I want to leave that open for you. I will be here next week with talking about the Red She-Hulk. So let's get into that one soon. But in the meantime, everyone be blessed, be happy, be safe, be smart. And if you're not smart, don't get caught. I will see you later. Everyone have a good one. Bye-bye.